It may seem like a pipe dream in our partisan political era, but activists in Florida say it's time to seek the sensible center in our politics. Good Monday morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to get our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and through the WJCT app. Just ahead, we'll tell you why the Centrist Project is taking off across the country and with a local chapter in Jacksonville. What are your questions about this? Do you consider yourself a centrist? If so, get on the line now. Or even if you're not, the number to join the show, 549-2937. Then later, how the First Coast is reaching out to help Puerto Rico, still without power, months after Hurricane Maria. Plus, Jaguars fans could probably care less, but Super Bowl week is here. Culpepper has a look at sports. All of that ahead this morning. But first, this hour, it's a growing movement that seeks to shift our politics away from the gridlocked two-party system. Following last week's government shutdown, the bickering that we constantly see in Washington, and that incredibly divisive 2016 election, in which both parties nominated historically unpopular candidates, there's new energy in the movement to reclaim the political center in America. In fact, most polls show that the majority of Americans are pretty moderate in most of their political views. But due to a combination of factors, everything from gerrymandering of districts to cable news giving the most extreme partisan voices the loudest platforms, to big money influencing politics, well, the sensible center these days doesn't have much of a voice or a place at the table. Enter a new organization, the Centrist Project. It's a group that seeks to get more independent candidates elected to office. Politicians who can hopefully break through political gridlock. Now, the Centrist Project doesn't envision this as leaders of a third party, but what they're calling America's first uniparty. The Jacksonville chapter of the Centrist Project recently held its inaugural meeting. Chapter leader Perry Wagg joins us now in studio with more about it. Perry, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us. And here's our question to callers. Do you think America needs to find its way to the center when it comes to our politics? Do you think our political discourse is too polarized? What are your questions for the leader of the local chapter of the Centrist Project? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. And Perry, this is good timing. You know, the two major parties are losing members. More voters than ever identify as NPA, no party affiliation, or independent. That's according to the Pew Research Center. So there's a huge block of voters in this country who are with you on this. So with that as the backdrop, how did the Centrist Project get started?
So the Centrist Project was an idea that was started by a Dartmouth College professor named Charles Whelan back in 2013. And he got a lot of support from the ideas of a book he wrote called The Centrist Manifesto. And if people want to go online to centristproject.org, and if they wind up, you know, liking what they see and they want to join us and become a founding member, they'll get a free copy of the book. And it's an easy read. I read it in an afternoon, and he's got some humor in there mixed in with it, which always helps.
You got to laugh to keep from crying, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that there would be groups like this springing up. Of course, the Centrist Project isn't the first one. There's another group called No Labels.
Correct.
A bipartisan group comprised of Republicans and Democrats trying to build a coalition of centrists. That's been around for a while.
Correct.
It's harder than it looks to get traction with this type of movement because there are very powerful entrenched interests pulling people to the extremes.
Absolutely. Well, and traditionally, as you know, as probably our listeners know also, over the years, as the parties, you know, started to get more extreme, if they'd move more to the center if something of a threat did come from the middle, so they kind of self-moderate. So it's definitely a challenge to get a consistent thing going for a long period of time.
Right. And so you are the chapter leader of the local chapter of the Centrist
Correct.
Project. When you started, you were pretty much the only member, but it's growing.
Yeah, it is. And we haven't put any money behind it. So that's kind of one of the best signs that something's, you know, growing on its own organically. I just heard about it a year ago myself, and I've been a no party affiliation voter since 2003. And so it came along at a perfect time.
What are your goals? What are you trying to achieve with this?
So nationwide, the Centrist Project is trying to get, as you know, moderate independents elected across the country. And locally here in Jacksonville, we've got two goals. One, just to help raise awareness. So thanks for having me on today. And the second thing is to try to help identify people who could run for offices here, whether it's for county commissioner or, you know, dog catcher or whatever, all the way up through Congress and beyond that are interested in running as independent.
As independent, no party affiliated candidates.
Correct.
You feel then that both major parties are broken, that neither party can effectively find solutions to the most pressing problems we face?
That, plus with our hyper-partisanship and polarization we have in the country today, honestly, if you tell someone that, hey, I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican, most of the time, someone from the other side, if you're trying to have a conversation, they're just going to tune you out. Or, you know, if a Democrat tries to say the sky is blue, the Republican will say, well, no, you're lying. It's green, or vice versa. So we're just at a point where we just need to, whether it's a No Labels or Centrist Project or whatever it might be, we're not in competition. We're all have the same goal of trying to get independents and from the center elected.
Right. People tend to assume strong partisans on both sides tend to look at those from the other party is not only wrong, but bad people.
Yeah.
Which is really not a good state of affairs for the country to be in.
Yeah. I honestly go back to President Washington's message in his farewell address of, you know, specifically warning us against political parties, because that's exactly what happens is people start questioning each other's patriotism, questioning their intelligence. I honestly believe, you know, good ideas can come from anywhere on the political spectrum. So to me, being a centrist independent, but, you know, about keeping an open mind, being the adults in the room, focusing on solutions and problem solving.
Your organization, the Centrist Project, has what you call a fulcrum strategy. You're focused on electing a sufficient number of independent candidates in closely divided legislatures and other political bodies to create a swing coalition where you can deny both parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, an outright majority. So
Correct.
It sounds like what you're trying to do, Perry, mm-hmm. is create something of a parliamentary system, like what they have in England, where there's three or four parties. And instead of gridlock between a binary system, you've got three or four power centers.
Yep. Basically, if you look at the long history of what's happened over the last, even the last 60 years, when primaries started, everyone thought it was a great idea because the people get to have a voice in the process of who their candidates are. But what's happened over time, as we've seen, is the primary system, especially with safe districts and stuff, candidates have an incentive to run towards their base, and then they kind of only half-heartedly turn back towards the middle when they need us for the general election. And we're saying, hold up a minute, guys, we want to have a say in this process. So if you're not going to let us have a say in the primary process, or you're not going to let us have a say, you know, at the table that way, we're going to try and get a little bit of a wedge in there in the middle. And using the U.S. Senate as an example, if we get, you know, just a couple of senators, we can deny both sides the majority, and they're forced to have to deal with the middle and work with each other.
Let's assume, for the sake of argument, the Centrist Project gets a few candidates elected in mm-hmm. this way. Let's say that it happened in the run-up to the government shutdown mm-hmm. last week. How would this strategy have gone into action then?
Well, hopefully we wouldn't have even been in that situation to begin with.
You think it could have helped avoid that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How so?
That's a good question. I think that knowing that it requires 60 votes to get something passed in the Senate and neither side has a majority, they'd have to... It forces them, whether they want to or not, no one says they're going to be happy about it, but they at least have to have an open mind. And then, you know, if they don't work with each other, then they're both going to be seen as obstructionists. And it just honestly feeds more into people saying, hey, you know what? The independent guys in the middle, we need more of those guys because they're the only ones who are trying to get something done.
And what would you say to those listening who might agree with you in theory, but they're cynical and they just feel that the party system is so entrenched there's so much money involved in maintaining it, and that gerrymandering is going to be so difficult to break, although that people are trying to work on that, that it's just such an uphill climb what you're doing.
I would say a couple of things. First, they say that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. Second thing I would say is we got to start somewhere. And the third thing is that, yes, we're small. A year ago, we only had one employee in the at the national office in Colorado, and now we have eight. We've raised $3 million over the last year. We have 29 chapters around the country, over 10,000 supporters. So we're growing every day, and with 45% of the electorate self-identifying as independents, people are leaving the parties regardless of whether we do anything or not. So we're just trying to offer a solution.
More people identify as independent than identify as either a Republican or a Democrat.
Yep.
Less than 40% of Americans now identify as Republican. Less than 40% identify as Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really quite striking.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's go to your calls now for Perry Wagg. He leads the local chapter of the Centrist Project. Do you think we need to find a way to end the polarization in this country? How would you define the sensible center in our politics? 549-2937 to join the show. Mark is in Mandarin. Hi, Mark. Good morning. Happy Monday.
Good morning, Melissa and Perry. My question, Perry, and I'm going to admit to a little ignorance here. I used to be no party affiliation or independent, and in several years ago, I noticed that I lost out on the ability to vote in the primaries. So 30 days prior to the primaries, I would simply switch sides, either Republican or Democrat, only so that I can vote. And then I would switch back to independent. It seems like this election system is very much disenfranchising independents or no party affiliation. How can you help me or help others who want to say no party affiliation but are losing out in the election process?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's a good point. Closed primaries are another way that centrist movements like yours are blocked from gaining traction.
Yeah, but that's why we have an uphill climb to change the system, and it's one of those things where you have to get a critical mass of people in elected office to be able to put issues like that on the table of getting open primaries and, you know, ranked choice voting and all sorts of other great ideas that are out there to fix the system. But we got to get over that initial hurdle of getting some people in office first that are independent. So what I would say is if you're dissatisfied with your Democratic and Republican choices, we got to stop doing the same thing, like I said, of, you know, continuing to vote for parties and vote for independents. And if we're able to get some independent folks on the ballot, if you see independent names, do your research, learn about them, vote for the person, not for the party. And if we can get enough independents elected over time, then we'll be able to get those things fixed.
You think that only independents can do away with the closed primary system in most states?
I think that both parties, it's a sign of weakness to have to gerrymander at all. To me, as Americans, we should want to succeed on the merits of our arguments, not on the size or shape of our district. And I think that it's in their interest to keep the primaries closed so that they can control the process. I personally think that if I was a party person, that I would want to have an open primary, because to me, it's if both sides have to face the same thing, it's kind of like the old thing in the 1950s of mutually assured destruction. I mean, if everybody from the Democrats goes and votes in the Republican primary, there's nothing to say the other side couldn't do it. So I think open primary is a good idea that they should embrace on their own, but I highly doubt they're going to do it.
Right. The system is so skewed now that for most races, it's decided in the primary.
Absolutely.
The general election is an afterthought.
Yep. Yep.
That's not how it was intended to be.
Even just where I am in St. John's County, you'll see a whole bunch of names from just one party and not from the other, and you don't even have any choices, really. So,
Jim is on the line from the mountains of North Carolina, listening online, I guess.
Awesome.
Hey, Jim, good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad you mentioned the no labels movement at the top, because I suspected that this was another incarnation of that, or even the third wave movement. Now, third wave gave us welfare to work, which actually ended up hurting low-income working mothers, along with other things that actually ended up hurting people. And don't we need labels to help us figure things out? Without labels, some can easily be tricked by politicians whose objective is to confuse people. I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Thanks for that. Is no labels a bad label? And I guess if you're calling yourself the centrist project, that in and of itself is a label.
Yeah, I mean, the end goal, though, is every independent candidate we wind up supporting, it's not like we have our own platform, which is the whole issue with parties, is they have their own platform. This is what you're supposed to support if you were, you know, Republican or Democrat or Libertarian or whatever. And what we're saying is we just want to help be the advocates to help get independents, centrist independents elected or moderate independents elected. And they can have their own positions on the particular issues that they want to have.
549-2937 to connect with Perry Wagg. He's leading the local chapter of the Centrist Project. It started a few years ago with one employee. It's growing rapidly with chapters now in a majority of states. What do you think about this as the latest Pew poll shows nearly 50% of Americans now do not identify with either major party? They see themselves as independent. Samantha in Green Cove Springs. Hey, Samantha, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, Melissa. How are you today?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say I think this conversation is wonderful and so important, but I wanted to say my whole life, I'm 28, and my whole early 20s, I was such a bleeding heart liberal, and it wasn't until I went and studied journalism and communications a little bit older in my life that it really knocked me out of that extreme left, and I never would have thought that would have happened. So I think these conversations are important, and when you have them, it starts to contextualize everything. So if I can be a moderate now, I think anybody can, but I just think this conversation is great.
Okay, well, thanks for that. And what was it about the study of journalism that evolved your political views, Samantha?
It's just the ethical standards that you have to take, and the act of listening. I think before I was just so set in my ways, and I just believe what I believe. And when I was forced to listen, you just start to kind of slowly over time float into a nice centrist point.
Okay, thank you so much. And I think she does reflect the view of millions of Americans as they get older, in particular. They rethink their positions on a lot of issues. Some Americans become a lot more conservative, but not all. Some Americans move to the left. And you know, Perry, a lot of Americans aren't monolithic in their views, which is why they maybe don't want to be identified with the R or the D label. Depending on the issue, they might be more liberal or more conservative.
Absolutely.
They have a very complex set of political beliefs, which is where your organization, I think, comes in.
Correct. I'd say, to me, my favorite college professor always said, you know, if you take nothing else away from college, you should walk away with an open mind and the ability to process information. And that's really what this is all about, too.
Okay. And so as people are listening, do you want them to join the Centrist Project?
Absolutely. We'd love them to. At least check us out. I mean, do your own research. It's centristproject.org. And we have a local Jacksonville page, too, on Facebook. And they can reach me at email centristprojectjax@gmail.com.
Lots of calls about the Centrist Project and the new Jacksonville chapter.
Awesome.
549-2937. Let's get a few more of you on the air on this Monday morning. Hey, John in Riverside. John, what are your thoughts?
Hey, good morning, everyone. First of all, I appreciate the conversation. Basically, just as a point of reference, you know, I've read some works by Plato and others. We can discuss the symptoms of the problem, which is the party system which latches on to polar positions. I think the real problem is the lack of philia. And Plato himself stated that without philia, democracy cannot function. What's kept our democracy functioning is ever increasing expansion, where people have space to expand. But in a democracy, a homogeneous society usually is the most successful. And you're seeing what's happening in Europe. And I'm just pointing it out. I'm not trying to make a judgment. But in Europe, you're seeing where democracy worked very effectively is beginning to break down. The society is becoming polarized due to events. So neither negative or positive. I'm just pointing out, without philia, democracy is very...
What's the word you're... John. John, what's the word you're saying? Cilia?
Philia.
Okay.
I gotcha.
But, you know, I would say to John, that this is not the first inflection point in our history when we've been extremely polarized. And
absolutely not.
So I would only say that to you in response.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that expansion, the increasing expansion westward and the ability of Americans to expand and to consume has deferred the conflict for now. That's why you're seeing increasing conflict in when there's more competition for resources, when economic situations become difficult, people become more polarized. If you notice the trends, that's how it works. One of the buffers for that within our nation has been the ability to constantly expand and allow people space to do what they want to do. So I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of complex things occurring simultaneously to create division and create conflict. Most of these are rooted in people's identity and in people's feeling of their place and position and hierarchy within society. To pin it purely on the Republicans and Democrats as a party system creating this, I think is a false narrative. These parties are political intelligence machines, think tanks. They latch onto scenarios to create voting blocks. They have nothing to do really with driving the story. The story is between the people of the country and their division, the lack of a common conversation. And it has nothing to do with just general politics and voting. It has to do with our identity and our perspective of each other. And until we come to a common culture and a common true understanding, something that we have to indoctrinate in the kids, no matter who creed, color we are, doesn't matter, a common cultural creed and foundation, then we'll find stability. Without that, we'll be divided constantly.
Thank you, John. And he touches on such an important point, Perry, in that for so many Americans, increasingly, politics has become so tribal that it really is identity. It's so much deeper than, well, I think I prefer low taxes, or, you know, I lean toward the pro-choice position. Mm-hmm. It goes so much deeper than that. Identity is so central to people's self-esteem, their sense of security, their sense of feeling that they matter in the world. It is incredible to look at the minute after the election happened. You saw Republicans saying that the economy is going great now, and Democrats mm-hmm. saying the economy is going into the toilet now. And back in 2008, it was the exact opposite.
Yep.
And that goes to what John just pointed out, which is that in this day and age, your political party, if you are a strong partisan, your political party is your whole identity. And it's gotten to a dangerous place.
Yep. Well, and I honestly think that the people who are very partisan in their beliefs will probably be the last people that we eventually are able to, you know, consider doing something like this. But for everybody else who sees that exact flip-flop, like you were saying, you know, for 8 years of a Democratic administration, the Republicans want special counsels and all sorts of stuff.
And you know, now we see the opposite.
And saying everything's horrible. And then the minute the other party takes office, then it's flip-flops. And the other side says, you know, so
and,
it's just.
And even though most people's daily lives are plodding along, you know, by and large unscathed, not people that are out of work, of course.
Yep.
But if but your identity has been trampled upon because the person that you identified with lost.
And for me, because I personally believe that most America is like a bell curve and most people are somewhere in the middle, I feel like if you don't want to talk about identity, if you're a moderate person, if anything, your identity is constantly trampled on because you don't have anybody.
For
the 17 years I've lived in Florida, you know, both sides are saying the same things at different times. It's just like, you know, I'm tired of both of you guys.
Here's a tweet from a listener. Labels divide us and place us in silos and keep us separate. Jack Webb is on the line, former Jacksonville City Council president. Hey, Jack, thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Melissa, how are you this morning?
All right, thanks.
Great conversation.
Thanks.
You know, your points are well taken with regards to the identity politics. It's a fascinating situation, and I think the prior caller is absolutely correct. How do you combat that? How do you combat that polarization? Well, it is through dialogue and communication. Problem is that the structure at this particular point doesn't permit that. As your guest was saying, an open primary would promote such dialogue and discussion, things of that nature. I think another part of this is the public financing of primary elections. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are private organizations. I guess they're quasi-governmental in a sense. But the whole idea that the government would pay use tax dollars to facilitate these primary elections when all of the electors not eligible to participate is problematic, I think, is systematically flawed. That said, this whole identity issue is real, which led me to make a decision about 2 months ago. And I am now a proud MPA.
Awesome.
Mm, oh, okay. Why did you make that decision, Jack?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I didn't find a home. I wasn't comfortable with the structure, with the positions of a lot was going on with the Republican Party, both local, state, and national. And likewise, on the Democratic side of the House, I wasn't comfortable with that either. So I just said, all right, you know what? I'm going to pull out of this thing, and I'm going to put the boat in safe harbor for a while until see what shakes out here with this political storm. And maybe there will be some healing of the country politically. Maybe there will be some growth in the center that can provide a home for people like myself.
Perry, it sounds like you need to recruit Jack Webb as your candidate for the centrist
project. I would love to have that happen.
Former office holder.
Would love to have that
former
happen.
Head of the city council. What's the website again?
Centristproject.org.
Okay, there you go, Jack.
Email me at centristprojectjacks@gmail.com.
I'll track you down.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you,
sir. All right. Thanks for that call, Jack. That's Jack Webb, former president of the city council. And here are a couple of tweets for you. Here's one from Brian. DACA, that's, of course, the big debate right now in Washington, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals issue, the Dreamers. Mm-hmm. DACA is one subject where different polls show over 80% of Americans want a path to citizenship for childhood arrivals, but the parties can't agree. Is this an issue for a centrist candidate?
Well, centrist candidates, you know, like I said, the beauty of this whole thing is independents can have their own platforms for themselves and what they're running for, what they want to believe. I have my own very strong beliefs on all the different issues, which I don't really want to go into right now. But some things like DACA, you know, to me personally, are kind of more of a symptom of a problem than the actual root problem themselves. And I would much rather see us be working proactively to, you know, fix the problems in their home country so that we don't even have to worry about people, you know, excessively coming here, that kind of stuff. So
here's another tweet. Where does the Centrist Project see room for compromise between school shootings and our constitutional right to have well-regulated gun owners?
Again, the Centrist Project doesn't have an official position on any of the individual issues. Their main focus is trying to advocate.
You're
to
more strategic. Yeah. You're just seeking to elect candidates.
We're just trying to get candidates out there and elected, and then let them be the ones to decide on the issues where they stand on stuff.
Let's go to Ray in Mandarin now. Hi, Ray. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. My question your guest is, what is the best prevent either a rightist or a leftist from posing a centrist or an independent? And if your program were to, you know, gain traction, there might be a big move towards centrist independent voting. But once this rightist or leftist has been nominated in that independent category, what's to prevent them from being a rightist or leftist once they get elected?
Yeah, thanks for that. And here's another comment for you that echoes that, Perry. It's on our Facebook page.
Okay.
Jimmy writes, I don't like this wishy-washy approach to politics. I don't buy any movement that fails to assert governing principles.
Well, there's lots of principles involved in this, and I wouldn't say it's wishy-washy. I would say that, again, our focus, we're not into playing games and having, you know, that kind of stuff. We're focused on problem-solving, solutions, having an honest conversation about what the problem is, finding the best solution, and getting it done. And, you know, politics is a game for a lot of people, but it's not for us. We want to get the solutions wherever it comes from on the political spectrum. And, you know, some ideas, like you said, might come from the right, some might come from the left, some might come from the middle. But that's our focus, is the solution, not so much.
At a certain point, though, won't you have to lay out a more specific platform? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Won't your candidates have to declare more specifically where they stand?
Again, those individual candidates, you know, we have some that we're already supporting, like Bob Walker, who's going for re-election in Alaska as the governor. Terry Hayes is governor of Maine, and she's running for governor of Maine. We're supporting her. There's a whole slate of candidates in Colorado that are running for state legislature. They all have their very own specific beliefs, and we're just wanting to get them on the ballot and let people make the choice themselves.
Let's go to Doug at NAS Jax now. Hello, Doug. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I noticed as the last election was going on, the same sort of thing that your guest noticed, that 10 million people more than voted for either one of the candidates chose not to vote. And I just believe that they're kind of, that a lot of that comes from people like me who are just mad that they don't get to be part of the process. And I think that that's just because they don't get to participate in the preliminary thing, and people don't get to, there aren't more independent people like Bernie Sanders, who affiliates with Democrats, but he's independent. You know, 2% of the Senate is already independent. And so I am trying to put together a website to help people run for the Senate, because I think that that's the target that we could actually, the 40 million of us don't think that we can participate in the process, to get. And from there, we could start putting down stakes, like figure out ways to make everybody vote, make states actually go out of their way to help people vote instead of disenfranchising people through registration and that sort of thing.
Thanks for that, Doug. Do you agree with him? Is the Senate the most important battleground?
That's our primary goal for 2018, is to try to get, you know, 3 to 5 centrist, moderate, independent candidates in the U.S. Senate. Whether it will happen or not, who knows? But that's our goal. That's our primary focus, what we're trying to get done for this year.
And how big a challenge is that, given the Supreme Court Citizens United decision, which essentially allows unlimited amounts of money in politics?
I'm glad you asked about that. I personally have been against this Citizens United decision ever since it happened in 2010. I feel like, you know, to allow people to have a megaphone based on how much money they have, to me, free speech, there's an inherent equality, you know, piece to that. And your free speech shouldn't be able to drown out my free speech, you know. So it's definitely, like I said, it's an uphill climb. But I honestly believe personally that the two-party system is not, you know, going to be around for our long-term future. It didn't exist for the first however many years of our existence. So, you know, we proved as a country we can live without parties, and I'd like to see us do it again.
You are the Jacksonville chapter leader of the Centrist Project. You had your first meeting last week. When are you meeting again?
We're going to be meeting again on Saturday, February 17th, and we are currently working on the location for that. If we get more and more people who want to come, then we'll have to get a bigger place. That's a good problem to have. So,
remind us again how people can reach you.
Centrist Project Jax, J-A-X, at gmail.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/Centrist Project Jax, and on Twitter at Centrist Proj Jax.
He's Perry Wagg, local leader of the Centrist Project. Now 29 chapters in states across the country, as more Americans identify as centrist, independent, no party affiliation. Perry, good to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And much more still ahead on the show this Monday morning. Later, Culpepper looks ahead to Super Bowl week and who may have played their last game as a Jaguar. But up next, the First Coast is lending a helping hand this month to hurricane victims in Puerto Rico. We'll tell you about it back in a moment.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, February 10th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 and 2017 events will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues, learn new ways to engage students, and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets today at wjct.org/teach.
Hello, I'm Doug Hansard, and I listen to the Florida Times Union On Demand as read by WJCT Radio Reading Service volunteers. The sound quality is excellent. This is a great asset for people like me, sightless and on the go. The Florida Times Union Daily on the radio reading website at wjct.org/ Radio Reading. Take advantage of it, and while you're there, register as a listener.
We've updated the WJCT app to make it even better. Stay up to date with local and national NPR news from your phone or tablet. Listen live to First Coast Connect or any of your favorite radio programs. Stay connected and informed. Download the WJCT app today. Available at the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Welcome back. Well, it's hard to comprehend, but 4 months after Hurricane Maria, about half of the people in Puerto Rico still have no electricity. That's nearly 450,000 U.S. citizens who have been living without power for four straight months. Blackouts regularly occur there for hours at a time, even in the capital of San Juan. Thousands in Puerto Rico still don't have access to fresh water. Food and jobs are scarce. Many houses are still uninhabitable. Kids can't go to school in many places since the school buildings are in the dark. Thousands of police officers aren't even showing up for work. Imagine that. Violent crime, not surprisingly, is rampant on the island. Now, just imagine if these conditions were occurring in a U.S. state here on the mainland 4 months after a hurricane swept through. Just imagine the outrage. Well, the good news is thousands of ordinary Americans are doing what they can to reach out and help their fellow citizens in Puerto Rico. This weekend, the Jacksonville nonprofit Mother's Cry is doing its part with a special event. Here with more leaders of the nonprofit, two local physicians, Dr. Uma Ayuni and Dr. Ravi Concha. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Ayuni, let's begin with you. Now, Mother's Cry is known around town as a resource for families of loved ones with mental illness and developmental challenges. But you're presenting something a little different to help Puerto Rico.
Yes.
This is a dance performance, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
You're very correct.
What's going to be happening?
What's going to be happening? You know, we thought few of us call the Rasachari, which means the flow of emotions. We formed a small group as the cultural ring of Mother's Cry. And we do the shows. And this time, many of our friends, they still have their families stuck in Puerto Rico without, and some of these youngsters are working 2 to 3 jobs. So we thought we would present what we have as a gift is I'm a lyricist and have a musician friend. And Dr. Concha is our resource manager. That means he's the one who is in charge of the funding and funds. So we thought we would present, and as a unity, we want to present as an integrated part, the Indian community, as well as the Puerto Rican community, the Afro-American community, all the ethnicities without any difference in the race, caste, creed. We are coming together, putting our dance talents. There's a young lady coming from Kentucky, 20 of them from Western Ballet in Tallahassee, and 20 dancers from Jacksonville community, and a few from the National Alliance on Mental Illness from St. John's County. You're all participating. So in one word, we are going to call it audio-visual extravaganza.
Very nice. This is happening at UNF's Robinson Theater, February 3rd. There'll be a performance in Tallahassee, I believe, February 4th. Now, Dr. Concha, as all of these different groups come together to do Indian dance, Western dance, ballet, the whole idea is to raise funds to help people that are still so severely challenged in Puerto Rico. How are you going to direct the money? Where will the money go?
The money will go to Habitat for Humanity. And we chose this event. Music is a universal language that connects the people. We chose this medium to connect the local people and give them the message and get the resources possible to help the people in Puerto Rico.
Sure. And I'm sure Habitat for Humanity is already working on the island to rebuild houses.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's certainly a worthy cause to get behind.
Yeah.
Yes, and then that's why we call this nature the magnificent, furious, and gracious, both. So the way it is scripted in Sanskrit, in English, and my mother language, Telugu. So these three together, what we are going to present first, the nature when it is in harmony. And the five elements, the water, air, earth, sky, and the wind, how when they are in harmony, there is a beautiful dance to show the peace that is in the nature. That we are equating nature to the divinity in here. So when it gets furious, that's when you have the wildfires, tsunamis, hurricanes, and the devastation. So that's, we are going to show that in one of the emotions of the dance, which is fury, which is, again, we are relating it to, in Hindu mythology, we talk about Shiva getting angry. So it's not exactly a religious one, but we are trying to equate the nature with the supreme force. And then in the end, we are bringing everybody back to harmony so that we can live and live in peace.
What a beautiful way to use art to express this. And by the way, these tickets are only $20. If you have a child 10 years or under, admission is free. Not only will you be helping Puerto Rico, Dr. Concha, you'll also be getting a window into this region's truly large and vibrant Indian American culture.
Yes.
In terms of dance, music, costumes. It's going to be really, I think, a beautiful performance.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be a beautiful one. This is a fusion of Indian dance along with the ballet. And we are trying to portray the culture, Indian culture, to the Jacksonville community. And we are also showing other cultures at the same time.
And it's fascinating to have the ballet dancers. Last night we had the first rehearsals together. Boy, 18 of them came, and we are learning from each other, from one another. That is extremely important, because once you communicate through dance, through music, I think we all can become better state.
Quickly, let's talk about Mother's Cry, which is a nonprofit that helps families who have loved ones with mental illness.
Yes.
And developmental disabilities.
Yes. Yeah, we started this organization in 2010. And ever since, we are constantly working on this project. And we help not only the individual people, we help the families how to cope up with the entire family when one person needed a special needs, like special circumstances. It's not one person who is suffering. It's the entire family is going to get affected. The family dynamics will change. So we are trying to help those families to cope up with this condition and how to live peacefully and amicably with everybody emerging into the community, how we could do that. We are going to, we are right now conducting classes either once a month or every 2 months.
Wonderful. And we're almost out of time. Just go to motherscry.net for more information and to get your tickets for Saturday night's performance at UNF's Robinson Theater. All money raised will help Habitat for Humanity's efforts in Puerto Rico. Dr. Uma Iyuni and Dr. Ravi Kansha lead Mother's Cry here in Jacksonville. Thanks
along
for all
with
you do.
And two others, Dr. Anjali Patel.
Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
A quick break, and in a moment, Culpepper looks ahead to Super Bowl week. That and more right after this.
Funding for children's insurance was just one health crisis facing Congress. Another one remains critical. Roughly 27 million low-income Americans rely on community health centers. The deal that ended the government shutdown did not include more funding for the centers, and if they shut down, the consequences could be dire. Caring for our community health centers, next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, journalist Franklin Foer talks about his new article in The Atlantic. It's an investigative profile of Paul Manafort, the former Trump campaign manager who has been indicted in the Russia probe. The article is called American Hustler: How Paul Manafort Helped Corrupt Washington and Laid the Groundwork for the Subversion of American Politics. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
There are some exciting new digital history projects being created at Florida colleges and universities. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll have part two of our series on the future of history. We'll discuss William Darby's 1821 Memoir of the History of Florida and go to Disney World. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues. As part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
I don't want no woman telling me what to do.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's Super Bowl week, but let's face it, most Jaguars fans could frankly care less.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Yep, this Sunday, it's the Patriots versus the Eagles, but there aren't enough chicken wings in the world to make a lot of us want to watch this game. Cole Pepper is here with more about that and the rest of this week's sports. Hey, Cole.
I now understand why some people watch the Super Bowl only for the commercials.
That's right.
You know, when you lose the way you do, the Jaguars did against the Patriots, it's one of those things that, boy, it takes more than a couple of weeks usually to get over it.
Yeah.
Doug Marrone, in fact, said he probably wouldn't even have the shock wear off till after the Super Bowl. And it's going to be interesting to see what the TV ratings for the Super Bowl are. I mean, they're going to be the highest rated show of the year. It always is. But to see what that's going to be like in Jacksonville, I think this is maybe the first time that Jacksonville and New York are aligned in this way.
Right.
The New York Post had a headline after the Patriots, of course, longtime nemesis of both the Jets and, of course, the Giants, who beat them twice in the Super Bowl, and the Eagles, who are in the same division as the Giants. The Post had a headline, worst Super Bowl ever. And I think some Jaguars fans, if it doesn't include the Jaguars, kind of feel the same way. The Jaguars did have some players compete in the Pro Bowl, though, yesterday in Orlando. Telvin Smith, Malik Jackson, Yannick Ngakoue, Jalen Ramsey, and A.J. Boye all represented the AFC. Calais Campbell made the team, but didn't play because of an injury he played with toward the end of the season.
A little bit of a consolation prize for those guys.
And Telvin had a very good game, led the team in tackles, and Ramsey knocked the ball away. Ngakoue got some good pressure. The AFC won, so maybe in a little tiny way, it's going to help the economy of Jacksonville because the losing team players each get $32,000 for playing in the Pro Bowl. The winning teams get $64,000.
Really?
So, not too shabby.
Really? Yeah, not too shabby at all.
Come back and spend it in Jacksonville, just saying,
exactly.
Fellas.
Yeah.
Now the Jaguars will be turning their attention to their offseason roster moves and free agency looming for a number of players. And there's not going to be a ton of turnover on this team, Melissa, in the offseason, but there are some guys with very familiar names who could have played their last game as members of the Jaguars, including linebacker Paul Posluszny, who becomes a free agent, cornerback Aaron Colvin, Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson, wide receivers, maybe Mercedes Lewis. There's an out in his contract, although the Jaguars haven't really been saying much about what they will do as far as that's concerned.
He played so well against New England, too.
Yeah, and my guess is they'll try to, you know, they'll probably want to keep him.
Yeah.
As is the case with most NFL contracts, the last year or the option year is the most expensive year for as far as the salary cap is concerned. The Jaguars don't have real issues with the salary cap right now, but they do have to make some decisions in terms of what happens going forward. Of course, the biggest decision of the offseason likely is going to be the Blake Bortles decision. He's due $19 million under his fifth-year option. If he plays on that number, that's a big chunk of change for a quarterback who you're not completely sure about. He did play better as the season went on. He did have success in the playoffs, particularly the last couple of games in the postseason. And there are some interesting options out there as far as the quarterbacks are concerned. So they have until March 14th to make a decision whether to have him play at that number, sign him to a new long-term contract, or let him go.
Well, hasn't he indicated he'd like to stay?
Sure, and I think in most cases, players want to stay where they are if the money is right. Bortles doesn't have the option to shop it somewhere else, but he knows he can play at a $19 million contract. Now, here's an interesting scenario. if the Jaguars aren't convinced they want to give Bortles a long-term contract, and I think that's a reasonable position to take right now since he hasn't really had the kind of sustained success that you'd like to see before you invest that kind of money and time in a quarterback, he could play on the $19 million in 2018. Then if you're still not convinced, you could always pay him as a franchise player, which is a one-year contract on the average of the top five highest-paid players at his position. The problem is the quarterback is the highest-paid position in the National Football League, so that becomes a pretty expensive proposition based on what the other contract numbers are. So you could have 1 year of Blake Bortles, you could have 2 years of Blake Bortles, or it could be Blake Bortles, or you could have none. Or you could have more than that based on a new contract. A lot of those decisions are going to be made here over the next, let's say, 6 weeks.
Interesting. All right, let's talk for a minute about Roger Federer winning his 20th Grand Slam.
Amazing, isn't it? I mean, this guy just keeps getting it done, a record 20 Grand Slams. He won his sixth Australian Open. That ties the record of Novak Djokovic and Rod Laver. And it's his sixth Grand Slam championship to be won after his 30th birthday. Now, while I will say that in this day and age, that's a record, by the way. So in this day and age of a better nutrition and a better understanding of fitness and preparation, maybe we should expect for players in all sports to perform better as they get older. But the way things are going with Roger Federer, I mean, just amazing and interesting. A couple of years ago, he took a year off, thought about retiring, had some injuries, but has come back stronger than ever. And now pretty much has cemented himself as the greatest tennis player of all time.
Pretty amazing. There's hope for all of us, isn't there? Maybe not at that level.
I didn't say anything past 40, but past 30 looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I should say that. Speaking of, you know, all-time greats, Tiger Woods made his return to the golf course yesterday as well at Torrey Pines over the weekend. For the first time in a year, he was playing in a PGA Tour event. And if you think about Tiger Woods in your mind's eye, you probably think of him wearing that red golf shirt on Sunday. He always wore red on Sundays. Well, he hasn't been doing that because he hasn't been playing over the weekend. It had been 888 days since Tiger made the cut and played on the weekend. He did this week, wore that red, looked pretty good, finished in 23rd place. Not bad for a return. They're going to have to finish up the tournament today because of darkness after five holes of a playoff. Jason Day and Alex Noren both will try to complete things this morning in California.
All right. Well, as always, thanks for coming in on a Monday, especially with that cold that
can
is going around.
Can you tell?
Cole Pepper, the hardest working man in the sports business. I tell you what, we appreciate you always.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. 1A is up next. We'll be back right here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.